Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
As I was writing the text that goes in the description of this particular lesson, I stopped for a definition. I asked my digital device to give me a definition of a word that I wanted to use. And as I got my definition and went back to my screen to finish my typing, all my brilliance was gone. Poof! Nothing. Nada. Everything I'd been writing for the last 20 minutes, just gone. I worked so hard to massage those words, and you know what? I got an attitude. And that's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and I know you never get an attitude, like ever, but I can tell you of all the attitudes that you might get, by the way, there's a whole training, you can get it on my website, it's called Attitude Hack, really breaks down where an attitude comes from, what it looks like, how it feels, what to do with it, but there are 9 different attitudes in that set, where we talk about some good attitudes and some bad attitudes, and Attitude Hack will really walk you through how you can control your attitude, but also how you can recognize attitudes that are prevalent in your culture, in your organization. The attitude that I want to talk about today, though, is not an attitude that's in the Attitude Hack, which really presses my buttons a little bit because I should have thought about it when I put that book together, when I put that training together. I didn't. And maybe because I've experienced it more. I've had to learn that lesson more since I wrote the Attitude Hack a couple of years ago. I've used the Attitude Hack all over the world. I've trained it in the Congo for the University of Kinshasa Psychology Doctorate Program. I've trained it for local schools and high schools, and I have a lot of fun with it. But I never thought of the attitude of resilience. The attitude of resilience is pretty profound. It really is. And when you look at from Thomas Edison to Bill Gates to Steve Jobs to Elon Musk, some of the biggest names in the history of success, Dale Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie, the Morgans, J.P. Morgan, S.R. Chase, I think that was his last name. These are people who learned what resilience meant by failing a lot. Thomas Edison was asked one time, how long did it take you to make the light bulb? I mean, how many tries to make the light bulb? He said, I had one successful try to make the light bulb. I found 10,000 other things that were not light bulbs, though, along my path to discovery. Let me say that in another way. I failed a lot before I got success right. I don't know anybody who has great successes with no failures. You just don't get there that way. Here's what I do know, though. People who have a lot of success can tell you about many of the failures that brought them this close to quitting. Well, what's the difference? Well, a leader who has the attitude of resilience has that stick-to-itiveness, that ability to say, I'm going after it no matter what, like a pit bull. I have an Irish doodle. She's determined sometimes to get her ball out from under the couch. She's determined to get you to play with her. She will bring a toy and throw it at you if you won't. If she watches you ignoring her long enough, she will throw the toy herself and go get it. She is that determined to play. She will jump in my lap. She will jump on my shoulders. She will climb like a cat to make sure that she gets my attention. She has figured out that if I'm checking emails or watching a video on my phone, that her nose is just sufficient to cover it up. And if she licks it, it will change pages. Yes, that dog is determined. Not like a pit bull. You know, they've got that bite clamp pressure on their jaw that once it locks in and that little bone clicks in their jaw, you almost have to injure them to get them to let go. That's stick-to-itiveness. That's that determination that says, I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to get my way. I'm going to get through this. And I'm not going to quit until I do. Stick-to-itiveness. the determination to see something reach its completion. Well, that's part of the attitude of resilience. But there are some other things that go into the attitude of resilience that every leader must learn to master. Little things, character things, like the ability to listen to the worst criticism in the world, the things that demoralize, the ones that call into question your very character, maybe you're even your identity, that make you wonder, was I even supposed to be born? And at the same time, hear people pat you on the back and lift you up and give you awards and point to your successes and go, look how awesome and wonderful you are. And maintain the character quality that says, whether they hate me or they love me, I will stay the course. See, that's a major character issue. And a lot of people, when they start getting the criticism, they go off track. They try to fight their way back. They look for the approval of the people who are criticizing them. They want the love of the haters. Why bother? But then there are also those that they believe if they can convince the haters to love them, that they'll have more adulation, more appropriation, more praise, more things will come their way if they convert the haters to lovers. There are international political policies written under that false conception of human relationships. If I just get my enemy to love me, then my enemy will no longer be my enemy, they will be my friend. Very seldom does that happen. Oh, you can win some over, and you can build a loving relationship with people, and you can even, as religious text would say, love those who have declared themselves to be your enemy. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win them over to loving you, though. Loving your enemy doesn't always make your enemy your friend. In fact, in The Art of War, another ancient text, you find that the friend of my enemy is my enemy, and the enemy of my friend is my enemy. And the enemy of my enemy, that's my friend. If you don't understand the dynamics of those relationships, it's going to be hard to move forward with resilience, because understanding human emotions, that's part of the nature of resilience. You've got to understand the haters and what their motivations and intentions are. And you've got to understand those who praise and flatter you and understand what their motivations and intentions are, because they're not always good. Sometimes it's their own nefarious intent, their own selfish gain that causes them not to hate you, but to praise you. And if your character is such that you don't recognize one from the other, that you don't see through the veil of their intent, chances are you're going to be misled. You're going to be led down a path to think, well, they're all my friends. They all care about me. They all want to see me succeed. Well, sometimes they want to see you succeed just enough to fail. They want to see you rise far enough that when you come back down, it's fatal. You know, I watched a little windstorm that went through looked like a city park gathering, like an outdoor concert, like maybe 4th of July or something. And this little windstorm went through and it started picking up tents and throwing them all over the place. And people's picnic baskets were flying all over the place. And there was one particular point where a guy was trying to hold his tent down. He was holding onto the corners of his little pop-up tent. And the wind started to pick it up. And I was watching as the tent began to float into the air. It got caught right in the updraft. It had just enough rigidity for the lift of the windstorm to pick it up. Now, this wasn't a tornado. It was maybe a 20 or 30 mile an hour wind. It wasn't a big deal, but it was enough to lift this tent in the air. And I watched this man holding on to the tent at 4 or 5 feet off the ground, at 10 or 15 feet off the ground, at 25 feet off the ground. And I'm thinking to myself, when does he make the choice to let it go? It's a $100 tent, dude. You're now 25 feet in the air. It's going to cost you way more than that to get a cast on your leg when you let go and fall. Now, the video didn't show it long enough. I don't know if he flew off with that tent and landed in Kansas somewhere with Toto, or if he went up another 5 or 10 feet and then let go, or If the wind finally let him go and he and his tent came down safely, I do not know the answer to that question. See, a lot of people would look at that and go, he's resilient. And a lot of people would look at that and go, he is unwise. At what point do you let go and realize the failure isn't losing my tent? The failure is losing what I can't recover. The failure is losing what I can't recoup. Let me tell you a little something about resilience. There are a lot of people that have that determination, that stick-to-itiveness. They want to hold on for dear life no matter what. They forget the haters, forget the adulation, forget it all. I want my success. I know what I want and I'm going for it until I get it. And the problem is there's a place where you got to cut bait. When you're pulling on that 50-pound test line and that fishing pole is bowing over like a question mark and you're not sure what's on the other end of it, it might be an old tire. It might be a gar. Might be an alligator itself. And at some point, you've got to ask the question, how long am I going to stay in this before I realize there's nothing good to come of it? See, that there's a really fine line between the stick-to-itiveness of resilience that takes the good and the bad alike, that takes the failure and the successes alike, that takes the ups and the downs, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. That kind of stick-to-itiveness, that kind of resilience, that kind of hold on, better is coming. And there's a fine line between that and the stubbornness that says, I don't care how long the horse has been dead, I'm still going to kick it until it gets up. I don't care how long the business has been failed, the relationship has been over, I'm staying in this. I don't care what the haters say. I don't care what the praisers say. I don't care what my friends say. I'm staying with this until it's done. There's a place where that becomes not resilience, but stubbornness and foolishness. The difference is the quality of your character. The leader who can't tell resilience from stubbornness is immature. Now, I can tell you that in my own life, there have been those moments that I just held on to a dream a little longer than the dream held on to me. I wanted something more than getting it would have paid off. I invested more in pursuing it than getting it would have ever returned on the investment. And sometimes, in those cases, the lesson is what you're really paying for. I've had relationships that I held on, that I poured into, that I did all I could to fix them, to repair them, to correct myself, to become a better somebody. All the things necessary to hold on to those relationships, only to find that there was no chance in the first place. It was never going to be right. It couldn't be made right. Nothing I did was going to fix it. But all that I did was bring myself a whole lot of heartache, go to a whole lot of expense, to come to the end of a road that doesn't even have a T or a turnaround. You're just now in vacant field and you're starting over from scratch. If you've had that kind of relationship, maybe it's been in a career field, maybe it's been at a very specific job, maybe it's been with a client. I've had those clients that I've fired because it doesn't matter what I invest or to what extent I go or how far out of my way I go or how much determination I insert into them. They don't want to be changed. Maybe you've heard the phrase that change only comes when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain required to change. See, resilience has to face that fact. And sometimes the stubbornness of our habits, we like to slap on the label of resilience. The stubbornness of, well, that's just the way I've always been. Maybe it's a little tinge of narcissism. Maybe it's my way or the highway. Maybe it's, well, that's just the way we've always done it. Old cultures, old religions, some that, well, they don't serve us any longer. Some habits, some relational skill sets that, well, they failed every time we've applied them, but we just keep applying them. there are a whole lot of, let's take one for an example. Children should be seen and not heard. Okay. How many cultures have we seen that philosophy result in child abuse, child sexual assault, sex trafficking? Well, when children don't have the right to voice what they're experiencing, that doesn't make them resilient. That makes them victims. There's a difference. The stubbornness that says, this is the way it has to be, this is the way it has always been, it's not going to change. That kind of resilience resists the change that's necessary. That's not the kind of resilience that I'm talking about. People will say, children are resilient. Well, to a degree, it appears they are. Their bones are softer, they don't break as easy. Their heads are softer, they don't break as easy. Or do they? See, what we know now, Bruce Lipton, Joe Dispenza, Caroline Leaf, Dr. Daniel Amen, all of the top neuroscientists in the world, Brené Brown, the list goes on and on, will tell you that between the age of 1 and 7, the human brain is molded at the subconscious level in a way that is almost impossible to undo. Or those ideas, those notions, children should be seen and not heard. The lack of respect for a young person's opinion because dad knows best. I know those axioms are often true, and I don't want to poo-poo them completely, but I will tell you that the idea that a child should sit down, shut up, and pay attention hasn't always served us well in the later years. The idea that if a child, specifically a boy, acts rambunctious and rough and tumble and wants to get outside and run and jump in the dirt and play with things that look dangerous, that we should sedate them and tie them to a chair in a classroom and put them in special classes and label them with some kind of disorder because they're acting like boys were made to act, that hasn't always served us well. And then to throw on top of that the insult to injury of labeling that practice as teaching resilience, well, that's not only foolhardy, that's malicious. That's not what I mean by resilient. And children being resilient, meaning they can take a lot and keep going. Yeah, like the Energizer Bunny or a Tonka truck or a Timex watch. I get it. But never underestimate how deeply the words that you speak into the life of a child, 1 to 7 year old, will hold on. They'll stay there. You'll hear them again at 47, at 57, at 67. Those same words that mom and dad and the neighbors and the teacher poured into that child between 1 and 7, the same silliness they heard from various social media platforms, the same absolute lies that have been shoved into their brain. Now, we may say they're resilient because we don't see the effect right now. What does resilience mean? It means you hold on for a long time. Sometimes those bad ideas, they sit there for decades, and then they come out in the classroom again when this young person's a teacher. They come out in business. They come out in government policies. All those implanted notions that have been in our children for 20, 30, 40 years, they're not gone. They're not resilient enough to resist them and move on without them, but they are resilient enough to hold on to them until they're the policymakers, the decision makers, until their decisions impact everybody. Resilience is a character quality. It's an attitude of the most successful leaders in the world. Resilience means you stick to it when it doesn't seem right. You hold on and you hold your moral ground, whether the haters are tearing you apart or the fake adulation is building you up. But you stand your ground with the moral character and quality to say, I don't make my decisions based on the haters or the adulators. That's not what drives me. I make my decisions. I choose my path. I take direction from those things that I hold in the highest esteem, my moral compass, my own core values, the decisions that I made early on in my life, and they've been tried and tested again and again and again. And even in the face of failure, those ideas have served me. Even in the face of the worst failures, that moral compass has held true. That's resiliency. That's the attitude that every leader who succeeds will possess. The ability to stay determined when it looks like all the odds are against you. When you're staring down the barrel of your worst failure and thinking, I will stand my ground. I will be loyal. I will be faithful. I will finish what I started until I have better insight. And then you have to go back to our last lesson where we talked about that idea of being willing to listen to somebody else's idea. Being willing to step back and go, I defer. Deference. That character quality to admit, I don't know everything. I will try with all my might to succeed. I will move on through every failure, through the praise, through the haters. I will keep going no matter what until I have better insight, until I have better information, until I have proven that it will not work. Then I'll try something else. But I won't be like the guy holding on to the tent at 5, 10, 20 feet in the air, wondering, when is the right time to let go now? The right time to let go was when the tent pulled your feet off the ground. That was the right time to let go. 5 feet in the air, now you're taking a risk. 20 feet in the air, now you're taking an incalculable risk. You have no idea what you're going to land on. And if the tent can pull your body in the air, can you even get to the ground from here? See, these are all questions we don't have the answer to. And at some point, resilience doesn't pay off. At some point, you got to cut bait. Is that a fish? Is that a tire? Is that an alligator? If you don't know, you probably should make a different decision. Don't be resilient to the point of foolishness. But when you have an attitude of resilience that says, I will stick to it. I will hold my moral character. I will stand my ground. I will not let somebody else's opinion sway my belief or the application of it. That resilience, that'll have some payoff. And that payoff almost always looks like success. That's my challenge to you. Have that attitude of resistance. That attitude of resilience. What is an attitude? It's what you think about how you feel and how you feel about what you think. And when you can manage those two things, because they're both choices, you can choose to feel consistently resilient in the face of the toughest challenges. And you can think through, what does it mean to be resilient when you feel like quitting? It's your choice. Success is the payoff. Stay with it. I'm Jay Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.